Regular meeting, July 2nd, 2026, at 10 a.m. Call to order. There's nobody here except myself, John Merchant, Amelia, and Diane. So, John is our guest committee member today. So, we call to order, correct? Comments from the public? We don't have any. And then, Amelia, that'll be you. Update on website and social media.
Thank you so much. We'll start with the social media first. Is it in the packet? Because it's in the packet. Let me see here now. Down 46%. We have the same male, female followers, non-followers that we always have. They looked mostly at photographs. The number one post was for, that looks like, I'm sorry.
The budget.
The number one post was for?
No, that was the manganese.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the manganese, yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
And that the huge spike that you see there probably corresponds with the manganese issue. Mm-hmm. Next we have the website updates. The spike for June doesn't, oops. Oh, I know what's going on with that one. With this. Huh, June 3rd and 23rd. Interesting that the spike here isn't on the same day as the spike.
Huh.
Here. So maybe they went to Facebook first.
Uh-huh.
Because that's how that's how people get the news. As soon as we had that manganese issue, mm-hmm. it was in the evening, and I called and texted Beth right away and told her that
had something
coming.
She put that stuff up.
So then she posted it, and then people were back to our Facebook.
I think I was in the middle of most of that with Travis and everything else. I think we did fine.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that we keep getting manganese is not fine. But
and that we don't have a plant that can filter it.
Yeah. Well, we do. Yeah. Only one, though.
We have one. Yeah, the oldest one. We're going to talk about that
in the
improvements.
Yeah.
So, no big news here. Got some friends from Poland looking at us. Our homepage was the number one hit.
I would think that because of all these candidates that are floating around, we would have seen more activity on the website. People
looking for information on the election.
I mean, I'd want to go there if I was writing a resume for a job, you know, to
right.
see what's going on. Then maybe I'd stop writing a resume.
But people kept writing them. Of course, Boardman, Oregon is our number one, and then Rancho Murrieta is the number two mm-hmm. for the
social media.
Mm-hmm. For social media. So things are running along. Any comments?
No, I'm not on that.
Okay.
We ready to go to discussion item number four, the pipeline?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I wanted to say that people, you know, when I went crazy and finally got the pipeline mailed to everybody.
No, I don't remember that at all.
Well, anyways, as a refresher, people are coming up to me and saying, I read this in the pipeline. So I really feel good about the fact that people are going to the pipeline more frequently. So that's number one.
Yeah, I had a lady call yesterday to ask questions about the country club and the golf course and the water, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But her first thing that she said was, how come I haven't read about the audit in the pipeline? How come I haven't had an audit update in the pipeline? And I said, okay, I'll get one in next month.
Don't we do that every month, practically?
We haven't had, you know, a specific article of that.
No article, yeah. If you went into the packet or you went into the minutes, you would see it.
Yes.
But so we normally just summarize the minutes.
So what I'd like to
see
then.
I want to add just a little something in my general manager's you know, that front page that I write every month,
right.
just like a bullet point about
that. Let me make a comment. what I would like to see is exactly what you're talking about, and that is an update on the audits. But I was thinking about putting it in the good news and making it in capital letters, you know, all the way across, and just basically say the audits for we've just submitted, you know, two more audits. We are left with one past due audit and one current audit, and they will be done by December. So I think that's, we need to say it. We need to say it big in case people didn't bother to read it someplace else. But if that works for you, I would like to put it in the good news.
Okay.
And if there's someplace else that we want to deal with some of the things that the community is concerned about, talking about, right, we can do that too. But for now, it is the good news. We're almost done.
With the audits.
Yeah. Okay.
It's the best news ever.
Yeah. The second thing I thought for good news was hiring of the GM and water operations manager. We are closing in on that. Yeah. So I think we need to make a point of saying more good news. The process for hiring a new general manager and for hiring a water operations manager is in full swing. We've looked at candidates and we'll continue to finish up on that.
You could say that the first round of interviews will commence on July 24th.
Oh, well, it'll be done by the time. Because we published that
the 14th.
Like,
the 14th.
Oh, okay.
It'll be done by the meeting.
Yeah, we published that like the 25th, 26th, 27th of the month.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Yeah. So so that was two. And then the third one, I think we need to point out about the manganese problem and that Travis handled it and did his usual spectacular job and as always lived up to his commitment to the community.
Yeah.
Anything else on the good news?
Lots of good news.
You think of anything that we want to point out? Oh, do we want to point out that Brandon went to a conference and he'll report on it on the...
Yeah.
Oh.
Ready?
Yeah, I don't have my key, but I get you one.
All right. So...
Brandon's going to... I believe that Brandon... do you want to speak about the...
Sure. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. It's
going to be in the pipeline. It's going to be everywhere.
It comes under pipeline, uh-huh. So there you go. Okay.
So the past few days, me, Patrol Officer Vitale, and Gate Officer David Labrada, we went to a training that was free and hosted by the California Fish and Wildlife. And we learned about AIS, which is aquatic invasive species. And they're really bad. And it's a lot more than what I thought. It was just, you know, you think that you would just get these little mussels on your boat and you'd be able to see them.
Microscopic, you
said? The juvenile ones are less, you know, they're bigger as your fingernail. They're not as big as your fingernail mm-hmm. when they're a juvenile. And they're microscopic when they first start out. They could be spread through water current and human transportation. So muddy waters, anywhere that there's moisture. So they express that all watercraft needs to be clean, drained, and dried out. And what that means is that there's various different boats. And these posters that they gave us, it shows all the areas of the boats that are usually checked for inspection. And if it's all clean, drained, and dry, it's good to launch. But with that being said, there could be standing water. Mm-hmm. You could have those microscopic, you know, mussels on your boat.
Just hanging out there.
And if you get into a body of water, especially like here, it could cause a lot of problems for everybody.
Yeah, to say the least.
Yeah, one of the things that, I mean, it matters because it disrupts the fisheries and aquatic habitats. It clogs boats, motors, infrastructures. It damages dams, docks, and water facilities. It increases operating costs and results in reservoir restrictions or closures. So if we were to get something like these mussels here, They could cause us to clog up the water pipes, mm-hmm. and then we're going to have a big problem from the community after we're spending money, you know, on the water infrastructure as it is. Right. You're going to be spending a lot more money forever because once you get these things, you can't get rid of them. There's no way to fully eradicate them. Mm-hmm. You have to continuously hire divers and pressure wash the docks, pressure wash the pipes.
Wow.
And those are divers. Divers aren't cheap.
Right.
So you're going to have to hire a company to continuously do that. And then what's going to cause for ratepayers here, since we're having to, you know, hire these people, it's going to cause their water bills, their electric bills, everything to go up on them. So the best thing to do, it costs less to prevent these things than to, you know, try to eradicate them.
Right.
So it was really good training. All of us really liked it. It was very informational. They did it really well. They did really well telling us about these things, and I'm pretty confident that we're going to be able to get something together. I got this brochure from the Tulloch Reservoir, and they actually, like, one of their things that they do is they have a non-motorized watercraft permit, and basically they get their non-motorized watercraft inspected once, and it has them valid through, like, this one's valid through December 31st, 2026, mm-hmm. so it looks like it's about a year's worth. So one of the kind of like the ideas I had is probably something like this. It also has a QR code, and it'll show you about all the bodies of waters that are infested with these mussels. One of the huge problems right now is in the Delta. If you go to Stockton Port, you could see these things.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
It's starting to come up the Sacramento River as well.
Oh, wow.
So I think one of my biggest concerns is if... say somebody that has one of these small boats, kayaks or whatever, they could take them to any body of water there, and if they don't have the knowledge to know where mm-hmm. these invasive mussels are, mm-hmm. they could come back to our waters and mm-hmm. give us some huge problems.
Right.
So
I think that we could do
an kayaks.
We could do an article and pipeline on it, and then Brandon, you're going to give a report at the at the board meeting.
Yeah.
Coming up in on the 18th.
Do we have a rule in place that states that no outside boats are allowed?
Yes.
Period?
Yes.
How do we police that?
At the gate.
Yeah, I mean, we do. We physically do it at the gate.
Yeah.
So the few things are about that. I mean, that does work, don't get me wrong. The gate officers are trained to look for, you know, outside boats from visitors coming in. Hopefully that they come in through the visitor lane. But what we're noticing, too, is sometimes a resident will go outside of the community, hop in their buddy's car that has the trailer boat, and come in through the visitor and say, hey, I'm going to my house.
Yeah.
So that's great. That's one of the ways. And then we got to let him go to his house because he's a resident.
I mean, I almost think, and maybe this is, you know, a different place and a different time, that if a boat's inside and it's non-motorized, it can't go anywhere else. If you're gonna use your boat here, it has to stay here.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. One of the that should be added to the rules is if you mm-hmm. have a boat that's launched on Rancho Marietta waters, it should be exclusive to Rancho Marietta waters and nowhere else.
Yeah,
right. And we have been working. We have been working with RMA to. Educate the community to start this campaign to figure out once we do. So are you an inspector now?
Yes, we're going to be certified. They're going to email us our certifications and everything.
Cool. So they're certified inspectors. So a way to just kind of logistically work through, you need to pull over, you need to bring your boat in and get it inspected. What do we say? Oh, leave your boat here at the gatehouse. Tell the day after tomorrow when Brandon gets back and he can inspect it. So we're kind of working out those things with RMA behind the scenes right now so that we can roll it out as a whole program.
I mean, you might, I don't know how specifically it would work, but if we have a sticker, we inspect and then apply a sticker, mm-hmm. That boat can't come back in the gate.
And we would have to trust that the residents, say if they do want to take their boat somewhere else, what these places do is they put a seal on it and band it. And if that seal or anything is tampered with, then it has to be quarantined for 30 days before it could hit that body of water.
Yeah.
So,
we could do something like that.
Yeah.
Did they talk to you about is it an issue with kayaks and paddleboards, or is it just boats?
They're saying that the risk is, like, those are basically, they categorize boats into four four different categories: complex, very complex, simple, and hand-launched. So most of ours fall under the hand-launched and simple category. Mm-hmm. The other ones that are very complex are these big boats, you know, like wakeboarding boats that have multiple compartments inside, engines, intakes, and all that type of stuff. Yeah. You know, ballast tanks. And luckily, we don't have these here. So the inspection process would actually go kind of quick just because of how easy the boat is and how small it is. But the way that they do it, their inspections go, they have a decontamination unit right there at the lake. And when they come in and say if the inspector feels that it needs to go to decontamination, they reroute the boater over there, and they get it sprayed at 140 degree water on the outside and then 120 degree water for the inside for about a minute. And that's what kills the mussels, is 140 degree water. There's no chemicals. There's nothing safe other than that that could kill these mussels and invasive plants. But they get inspected right before they hit the lake. The problem here is we don't have that type of manpower, especially with the budgeting constraints.
Yeah, they're doing. When you drive to Oregon and Washington, every 20 miles on the interstate, there's another station.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, they don't. Yeah, all the way up. And you have to stop if you're a Californian and you're going to Washington to use your boat. Yeah. They're going to stop you in Oregon. They're going to stop you in Washington. And Tahoe's got a huge program now.
Yeah,
I was up there the other.
They're good.
You know, there's a lot going on up there. They're really concerned.
They showed us these decontamination units. So that lake specifically has a stationary one. And they showed us the price of these things. Those are about $400,000 or more for a stationary unit. If you were to get a decontamination unit that's like the pressure washer and everything, that's around the ranges of $50,000. And that's a mobile one. But other than that, I think prevention is the key to doing this. We could hand out brochures to kind of educate our boaters. And I think work with the fishing club and try to get as much education to the public out there as we can to help prevent this thing.
They might actually consider, we have two formal boat launching areas that you might want to put a sign up.
Yes, and that's I've been working with a fish and wildlife scientist. She said that she's going to come out here sometime during the summer and survey the lakes and also try to look for good places to put signage up for these things.
And when we talked with RMA about that too, and they were open to, if it's on their land, adding signs.
Okay.
So what about the brochures and those nice colored brochures that you have there?
Yeah.
Can we purchase those from Fish and Wildlife, or do they?
I'm sure that they'll give us a stack of these for free.
Okay, so that's what.
I'll talk more to the scientists and see if this, because when you're an inspector, this is the things that you would hand the boater when they come in, you introduce yourself, you let them know what you're going to be doing and why you're doing it. And, you have to work with the boater, and then you hand them these, and they're like, oh, okay, this is,
So see what resources they have for printed material, and then also when you're talking with them, they should have resources for, like, photo-ready, camera-ready, JPEGs that we can just put on the website, put on Facebook, get out on social media. They should have articles. I'm sure that they have camera-ready materials for us to share with our community.
Right.
Right? So we get exactly the right message out, and it's very professional.
Can I just butt in here for a second?
Yeah.
We have Lake Clementia, and I'm sure this is a small possibility, but they use their boats, obviously, on Lake Clementia, and they use their paddle boards and kayaks and all that stuff on Clementia, and those things they take out of here, and so they could be putting in their paddle boards over at such and such a lake that's infested. So I think we need to at least warn people that if they're using their paddle boards and wake boards and what, not wake boards, but any of the things that they put out there, kayaks and everything.
If they take them out of the community.
If they take them out of the community, and that's a good place to say you need 120 degree, put your tea kettle on.
Yeah.
And cover that area. So I just wanted to mention that as something that we probably in the process of communicating all this stuff to people, we could point out that that is can could be and can be an issue also.
Exactly.
It seems like it's easy enough, though, that if they're just dry, they've got that these, even the eggs can't live if there's no moisture around them. So that's, for a kayak or a paddleboard, it's not hard to dry it off.
Yeah. I mean, you also do, from what it looks like, you have to show the community and the person that's the boat owner exactly, like, where to be looking for these things, because they love dark, shallow, damp places, like dark places, dark moisture places, 90 degree angles, hard to reach places. Like they're like roaches. They like
they hide. Know?
Yeah,
they roaches hide. Of the sea.
Yeah, basically. But I mean, I even learned about the history of where these things, you know, where they came from. They originally came from the Great Lakes. The quagga and zebra mussels, and then somehow they went, they traveled from there to Lake Mead. Somebody brought a boat from over there to Lake Mead, and they must have had standing water or something in the boat, and they got Lake Mead highly infested with them now.
Whoa.
So, and then how we got the, so that's the zebra and quagga mussels, and, you know, they only get a fingernail big. Now, the golden mussels, which is what we're having a problem here in California and the Delta and everything, these mussels get up to 2 inches big, and they're known as the mussel, the steroided one, the version of those. And that's the ones that are having the problems at the port of Stockton. And I guess a container ship came from, like, Ukraine, dumped their ballast, and, you know, and that's how we got them. So,
okay.
There you go.
It's an issue to know about, and I think that we need to do as much as we can in the pipeline and all the rest of it to inform the community. I really like the idea of our brochures, you know, being available. Give them
and
to
we'll
them.
Get signs up as soon as
they
we
could,
can.
You could give them out at the gate.
Yeah, and hang the posters at the gate, and, you know, more information out there is the better. What I'm kind of feeling like now is more that I... You know, I went to this training. I talked to people. It seems like we're a little bit behind on this. Like Lake of the Pines and Lake Wildwood already knew about it and already had programs in place.
In place, right.
So.
And we want to be sure that we keep RMA in step with us so that they can be helping us lead the charge on this.
Correct. Yeah, I think
and informing their community. It's a hugely collaborative
project.
Yeah.
Yeah, we met with Vicky and went over all the... just kind of a beginning strategy on how we're going to communicate this. Yep.
Need to be keeping a bottle of Tabasco on hand, too.
Yeah. I wish these things were edible.
Well, anything is edible.
Yeah. Whether you want to eat it or not.
Yeah. Another. And I want to say thank you to Brandon and your team for taking the initiative on this and looking into it and getting the... process started for us because it's
that's
very important.
Brandon's mode of operation.
Yeah.
He does not let anything sit still. He always investigates and helps us figure out how we can manage some of this stuff.
So thank you.
My last thing on the pipeline and maybe even the good news is on the manganese problem and how it was handled. And the good news is that Travis, because of his efforts, we were able to avoid a serious problem. So can we put that in there, too? Yeah, okay.
I think that with the timing of the discussion we need to have on this, I think it goes further than our reaction to the incident. It needs to really, I mean, we need to air this out because this has been an ongoing problem forever, and this highlighted, I mean, this took us to the highest levels we've ever experienced. It was the hardest control we've ever experienced. We were fortunate in that he got to it before the water left the plant and went into the tanks.
Mm-hmm.
Once it got in the tanks, we were going to have yellow water incidents.
Exactly,
and, we were
and a lot
have.
Of it.
So, you know, we know that the membrane plant does not accommodate this, and we're either going to have to put something in front of it or make modifications to that plant to bring it up to the standards that we enjoy with plant two.
I think
which is 35 years old in a wall shake and has absolutely no problem processing manganese.
Thank you.
I think that Travis plans on bringing to the improvements committee a whole
A presentation on
presentation
that.
About
yeah. There's issues that go even beyond the manganese. I mean, you know, the going forward, the you know, this plant is really not well designed to meet our
plant,
needs.
Yeah, plant one. Well, plus the continuing expense of the membranes.
Yeah,
I have yet to hear Travis come to the board and say I need any money at all for plant two.
You know, if you right? if you get in one-on-one conversations with our folks, they will tell you flat out that having that there was a bad decision. It does not do what we need it to do, and it is highly labor intensive and very expensive to operate. So we need to fix it.
And yeah, I agree.
And I don't know that we fully dealt with the immediacy of that problem. You know, in our upcoming, we're in it, in our budget. Maybe from a CIP standpoint, you know, Travis can make a recommendation as to, you know, something's got to go down the line and that has to be inserted ahead of it.
I'm going to say this one more time. What the hell? all of this, including the search for emergency water, including our infrastructure, including all these problems with the plants that come up, or at least our one plant, it all has to be put together. You can't deal with groundwater wells separate from infrastructure. The cost of that all comes into water, sewer, and drainage. And I am very, very, very excited and anxious to put in a water operations manager, because that person will be overseeing the whole thing, and maybe we would actually get a strategic plan for those three parts of, you know, water, sewer, drainage.
Yeah.
And
like a 5-year, 10-year plan.
Right.
To,
right.
And to bring it all together
and put it, make it compatible. We have the Loomis report. We have at least the beginnings, if not the beginning and the middle of a report that brings information to us about how and what we should be doing.
Yes.
So I think that needs to come before the improvements committee, and it needs to be discussed. And the other thing about the water operations person, and this would probably be under personnel, but there are things that we need to do that we have nobody to do right now, and one of them is the Urban Water Master Plan, and the other one is Clementia, and you know, whether or not we can flip that, and continuing on groundwater and understanding recycled water. Anyways, those are all things that on some level need to be communicated to the community, but before we communicate anything to the community, we have to know what we're doing. And so that's my take on that stuff, is you got to start with a plan.
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to make a shout out to Travis in the good news that that he was able to prevent a disaster.
Another disaster.
Another disaster. Okay. Okay. Discussion item, the community letter. For how long, Amelia and Diane? I don't know. A year? 2 years?
Diane's been here, so yeah. That was September.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about this community letter, and what my thought process was on this was that things change pretty rapidly around here, but some things are consistent. And for me, this came up when we started talking about security and how people were treating gate officers and the confusion around CCNRs. And so we talked about the idea of making a magnet with 5 specific phone numbers for the residents to call in case they need somebody. And that was RMA, CSD, the Sheriff, Highway Patrol, and what was the other one? The gate. The South Gate. Mm-hmm. So, and then the second part of that would be to explain to the community when and why you would use those particular phone numbers to contact the correct place to get an answer. And then the other thing we talked about was instructions and definitions. That was the one I just explained, security gate and patrol. The biggest problem, I think, has been anyways, is the fact that the community likes to tell the security department what the rules are. And so my take on that is we do a separate sheet. We've talked about this. A CCNR, so you pick the 10 or 12 most important, most significant rules. And in that letter, we have a separate page that says, pay attention to this, basically.
Yeah. Or we could put out a chart and ask people to check off which rules and CCNRs they plan to obey.
Am I going to stop at stop signs? Well, maybe. Am I going to drive 20 miles?
So when we take down their license plate, we could compare that to the form and say, oh, it's not a problem.
They've already told us in advance they had no intention of stopping.
Right, yeah, right.
Oh, I'm glad you came, John.
Always a little bit of humor can be expected.
Their children how to not misbehave.
Yeah, what an interesting concept. And then I didn't know if we would want to put something in there about just where we are right now, community-wise, you know, that we're hiring these people, that we're doing this and we're doing that, and to promote. And we've never sent a letter out to the whole community that I know of except for the budget stuff.
No, we haven't.
And so... I really would like to go forward with this. I don't know if Cecilia wrote a few thousand dollars into the...
I have a $5,000 spending limit, so we can keep this under $5,000.
Yeah, I think so, too. Right. So it doesn't have to necessarily be in the budget.
A budget item, okay. Yeah. That's my fun money.
Okay. So I guess what I'd like to do is go forward with this. We'll put together an outline. I'll get the 10 most important CCNRs and you know, instructions and definitions and all that, and get a fairly comprehensive communication out to the community.
I love it.
The whole community. Yeah. John, you like that?
So the other thing...
Go, John, and then I had a thought.
Well, I wanted to deal in some way. We have now, because Patrick responded to...
Gail. For the grand jury. That was one thing I was going to ask.
Yeah, and it was okay. I mean, I wanted more input to it, but it was fine. I think we should basically be saying what I think we all agree with is that in, you know, 84 days, we're going to answer the complaint. And inside of that, we will provide an accurate, up-to-date status on all of the issues to which they have issues.
Can we, it's not on the agenda, so let's talk some more about that under the director and staff comments.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I do want to get some more direction.
So have we finished the community letter, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. So the next one is number 6, Rancho Murrieta Resilience Plan. I have been on the fringes of this until recently, last week I think it was. I went to one of the meetings that they've been having.
So start at the beginning for us. The resilience plan is...
I will.
Okay.
So when this started, which was probably about, I don't know, was it a year already?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah. The county came up with this, and they were not just working with Rancho Murrieta, but they're working with other places too. They got a grant to help the communities who are not in the city or in an area where they can get immediate help to figure out how we can get 6,000 people out of here. And they've held a few meetings. They have a plan, and they are moving forward with it. They have not gotten a good response from this community, and I think part of that is because we haven't promoted it. And now that we've got a program, they put together their PowerPoint program about what's going on, And I don't know if they have a brochure explaining how it got started and everything, but it is a county program, not a state program. And the idea behind it is trying to figure out an efficient and safe way of getting people out of this community and a few of the surrounding areas also. So that's the basis of the Murrieta. They actually call it the Murrieta Resilience Plan. So they're not lumping us in with a whole bunch of other communities who have similar issues or some issues. I don't know. I asked, his name is Travis Chappelle, not to be confused with Travis Bohannon. I asked him to send me a copy of the PowerPoint, which he did, and I we can get have a deeper explanation of how this all got started and everything. I don't know if we want... It's on my computer, and we're going to try to get it off of there. But I don't know how far we want to go with getting involved in the sense that we're going to promote the meetings, we're going to tell the community about what's happening, we're going to encourage the community to pay attention, because we really need to know how we're going to get 6,000 people out of here and what the options are. So I don't know if we want to put the PowerPoint out there at this point, but I do know that we need to tell the community that this is happening.
I wonder if he would come and give a presentation to the board, if that's
something. He might, yeah. Or somebody, I think he's in Southern California, but he might. We have other people.
I'm
and John Long.
Long and I and Greg Pryor are what they label as key contributors, okay? And I think the whole program and the grant and the focus on the county now has on emergency evacuation comes from us. It started here. We raised hell about it. There are parts of it at this point that we are questioning. And there's really two entities that we have to worry about. There's an in-place emergency, which is a flood. Okay, you're not going to run away from here in a flood. You're going
to,
you know, maybe evacuate certain areas, but you're not going down the road. The real issue there becomes, as it was in the New Year's Eve flood, that during the period that the road is closed, we have no access to emergency services.
Sure.
The closest in the New Year's Eve flood, the closest medical attention we had was not by helicopter, was 35 miles away in Jackson, not in a hospital, in an emergency center. So the other is fire.
The fire.
And we're trying to educate and work with what were preliminary results of that seemed to assume, grass fires are not a problem.
Burned down Lahaina.
I didn't know that.
And, you know, we kind of said to them, well, where do you live? I mean, you know, and they're not a problem with a south wind, but when you get a north wind, and, you know, my experience over 40 years is
we get a lot
more north wind now. Right. I don't know why, but we just... It just seems to me it's a qualitative analysis. Mm-hmm. So we're staying completely involved in it. I don't know. Part of the problem is that the meetings have been sparsely attended.
Very
sparsely. Sparsely.
Two people.
And
are they here?
Yeah, they're here. They have been hosted
in the community.
The first group was in the community church, and where these were, I was out of town.
The second group was, they had two. They've had two every time they've come. So the second one was a week or so ago.
Yeah,
and they had one meeting at the community church, and then they had the other meeting at the villa, not the village, the villa. Room that they have.
Okay.
And it could have held probably 60 people and there were like 10 there.
Yeah, and 10.
But at least, some of those were the people who have a stake in the situation, the developers. Jeff Pearson was there. Actual community residents, there were probably 6 or 8.
There will be as development progresses here, one way or the other, there will be much more of a consideration in the environmental impact report to emergency evacuation than has ever happened before. Mm-hmm. And that's coinciding with the fact that in light of Maui and Paradise, mm-hmm. and Los Angeles, that this is on the lips of every supervisor in every town. Mm-hmm. In the entire, you know.
In the state.
Nobody wants to be there saying, well, we didn't do anything, and then
right.
have
right.
that kind of approach.
Sure, so, okay.
So it's a timely issue. And yeah, we can report on it. I don't know that we can do much about it. As it sits now with the responsibility for security, we would be asked to assist in an evacuation process. And there are some key elements to it. Number one being the funnel aspect that we have onto the Jackson Highway, mm-hmm. the levees that need to be created or the levees that need to be reinforced to prevent it from flooding at Slough House, mm-hmm. and then subsequently in an emergency evacuation to the west, we have to try to get enhancements to the Grant Line interchange, because even if you get them out,
They're
ultimately going to back up all the way to Rancho Marietta, because mm-hmm. they're not going to be able to get through. You're not be able to get through at Grand Line. So all of that's part of it. So that's kind of what it is.
And the equestrian center, you know, too. You talked about the equestrian center.
Yeah, and the other thing was in the evaluation of the worst case scenario. The worst case mm-hmm. scenario is a weekend, because all the cars are here, mm-hmm. okay, and all the people are here. It is compounded
events.
By the fact if you get it on a Saturday and you get an event
at the equestrian
like we just
center.
Had at the equestrian center, number one, where you have
more
maybe
people.
Thousands of people, and number two, where you have an array of horse trailers and mm-hmm. horses that are worth a fortune, mm-hmm. all of which are going to want to get out. Mm-hmm. So all of that's being considered in the flow patterns that are being created with this grant money by these guys, consultants that are doing the project. Mm. But there's a ways to go here.
So it's a preliminary draft kind of a presentation right now.
Oh, it's not even that.
No.
Oh. And yeah. So at what point?
They'll be coming back again.
Okay.
With a more refined.
In the fall.
Yeah. Early
okay.
fall, I think.
With a more refined idea of how we're going to get the heck out of here.
Right.
Yeah.
And then is this something that we get to have input on?
Yeah, I certainly, if we're prepared to have input on it, I can make sure we have input on it.
Okay.
I can pretty sure I can get that done.
Yeah, so I think that the board needs to know about this, and we need to start getting involved in this.
And
what about
RMA?
Yeah.
RMA has an equal responsibility and more of a collaborative responsibility with us, both from the standpoint of compliance and security.
Right.
And gate operations.
The village has an evacuation plan, and they did a really nice job. Not the ends within, you know, certain people are responsible
right.
for certain
right.
areas.
Oh, we did that too.
It. And but what about putting together in the fall that next meeting an event at the country club?
Yeah.
And make somewhere. It kind of a fun event, but also so that they come.
Mm-hmm.
But I think putting an event on at the country
we
club
can,
and,
we
and
can,
really
we can,
advertising.
We can talk about that, because we can get involvement at the supervisor level. We have two supervisors who are touched by this program in District 4 and District 5, which is Pat Hume and Rosario.
Rosario, yeah.
So... Yeah, we could probably get something going. Might even be able to get some money.
Yeah.
Where I'm going, folks, is I'm trying to figure out, or we need to figure out, how we can get this information out. We don't necessarily have to give them everything, you know, the whole report and all that sort of stuff. But I'd like to figure out a way in the Beth Bedaris, for one, you know, can talk about it. We can put it in the pipeline. We can put it on our Facebook page. And we can present it to the... board as a topic of discussion, that not, we don't necessarily have to do anything about it, but that this is happening in our community.
Mm-hmm. There's probably a timeline on it, but I was going to suggest, like, what about something like an event like Summerfest, and everybody's there, and you have, like, a little stage. And
wow. That's a good. Yeah, that's yeah, a really I good mean,
there's,
idea.
There's a lot we could do with that. And like I said, you know, we could maybe dredge up some money for that. Maybe we can get some county money, or she has discretionary funds. Hume has discretionary funds.
Okay.
Maybe we can work on that.
Okay. Cool. So okay. For right now, do we want to just do a heads up?
Yeah, I would give it a mention.
Yeah.
And I would.
In the pipeline, do you want me to add it to the board agenda as a discussion item for
this is
July?
Something. Yeah.
Yeah. I know, just discussion in brief. It doesn't really have a lot to do.
Just really calling people's attention to the fact that this is happening. A couple of years ago, I was involved in the organization of our areas within the gates, and getting one or two people in each area, depending on how big they are, to be the contact person for people who are unable to get themselves out, or who are confused and upset, or in any circumstances where you need help to get out of the community.
Okay.
So the person who was very involved in this is Brenna, and I'm sorry, I have
Brenna Howell?
Yeah. I don't have her card. I have her card. And I talked to her after the meeting, and she moved here. So that's a pretty cool thing, and she wants to get going on this type of thing again. So
I think
that'll be a good
In 1997, in the flood, which was the biggest of the three, we evacuated parts of the South, and the plan called to send them to the country club, which we did, and the country club wouldn't let them in because they weren't members.
Wow.
So, you know, there's some work to be done there.
We want to support the country club.
We don't want to. Okay. So on that same note, I've been working with Phyllis
Banducci.
Banducci, I knew it was a B. And we did get our Fire Safe Council designation, and we have FireWise. So I'm going to, with your permission, get the information on that, because I understand it can help with our homeowners insurance.
It will. Certain insurance companies, I get from USAA, I get about $125 discount on my fire insurance, on my homeowner's policy, based on the fact that we're a FireWise community.
So I'm going to put that on the website and Facebook so that information can get out to everybody.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Okay, then I think we've done a good job on the resilience plan, and I also recommended to Travis Chappelle that he contact John and John Long, because this is the expert sitting next to you right here on that expressway that may or may not happen, and he's John's and John Long too. Yeah, also,
there is more traction now on Grantline than we've had in the past. It's we're working on it. We're working on it.
Okay.
So then, what you're saying is that when you get down to Grantline, it would be so impacted that there'd be no place to go
and
anyway.
It would be in a flood. It would be 7 a.m. on Tuesday times 10.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, and
the traffic,
it's not uncommon for that traffic to be backed up a half a mile right now.
Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I drive past it coming in.
The influence of the connector and the modernization of the intersection is somewhat hampered by the fact that it's going to be a while and it's going to be two lanes at that point. But what we could get, or what we're trying to get, is turn lanes. We want turn lanes. So, you know.
That'll help ease a little bit of it, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll help. Mm-hmm. It'll help a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, both regular and in an emergency. So we're working on it.
Okay.
Let's hope we can get a plan together before we have an emergency.
Well, we can learn so much for an emergency, we should probably wait till we have one.
Oh, that is one tactic,
then
one strategy.
We'll make the plan.
Well, at least we can find the humor in some of this.
Yeah.
Okay, directors and staff comments. We want to go back to...
I have some more humor for you.
Oh, good.
Here's where, from a communication standpoint, and I don't know when and how we do this, but it is my goal, personal goal, to put to bed forever and ever the issue of selling or not selling water to the country club. Mm. And I want to start it without adopting or embracing one decision or another. And I have sent some of this to Patrick already, because when you read the 87 agreement, which I have done approximately 50 times.
you're 49 up on me.
And yeah. I had the privilege of having a couple of substantial conversations with Dick Brandt, who wrote it and signed it. And I'm trying to get my arms around the impact before we consider what we might do. So I tried to do it as best I could, and I asked you originally, we either did, and I can't remember, a study, or we started a study and we reported on it about...
Coffin Associates did it. I was responding to that email, but I was finding, tons of background information I want to share.
There are traces of reports that Paul made, Paul Stevenson, about the status of this ongoing analysis, but then when I go look for the report, I can't find it.
It's buried in a board meeting report.
Yeah, because here's why I wanted to understand that. And this number may be wrong, but it stuck in my head that we were talking about 4 cents, 4.5 cents a cubic foot to manufacture recycled water. What we charge residents for potable water is 0.275 per cubic foot. So what I tried to do is I said, okay, at the moment I'm going to assume that if we were to charge the country club, we would be charging them 0.272, whatever that number is, times the amount of cubic feet that they use. It may not be the right number, and there is some evidence that manufacturing of recycled water, may be cheaper than potable water. I'm not sure, because there are places it says it is, and there are places that it says that it isn't. So I took the potable rate. So the club uses, on average, 475 acre feet of water, recycled water.
Okay.
Forget about what they use potable, because they use more than that. Okay? And that's 43,560 cubic feet of water in 1 acre foot. And when you do the math on it, you get 20,691 cubic feet of water that Country Club uses.
Okay,
recycled
If you were to bill them at the potable rate, and again, I don't really know what the rate is yet, you would be billing them $517,275 on an annual basis.
$517,000. Okay.
So when you look at what that really means, and I can't do this part either, but I made an assumption just so I could get into ballpark somehow. If they were to bill golfing members for irrigating the golf course, I'm not sure how you would go about billing social members who only eat hamburgers, and they eat those are cooked with potable water. So,
okay.
So if 500 members,
they can play once a month.
If 500 members of the country club were billed for that cost, it would cost each of them $1,035 a year, or $86.21 a month. Okay.
Well, they can afford that.
Okay. So without making any assumption that we would do one thing or another, and that's why I want to try and find this report. And
I have it here.
Maybe,
I'll send it to you immediately.
Maybe update it. Because we can also compare that against Cecilia's recycled water budget like, okay, here's the budget for the year, and here's what the manufacturing of recycled water would be. And our responsibility in the agreement is to make it, and the agreement is adamant that we are responsible for the cost of manufacturing that water. The country club is responsible for the delivery of that water to what would be Bass Lake or Hole 10 or Hole 17. And I don't know whether we really charge them, but it's gravity feed. I mean, so we're charging them for a 4-inch pipe or however it gets there.
Yeah, I don't know that we're charging them.
Yeah, however, we did have another issue where we had all kinds of problems with Lake 10 and recycled water that cost the district
about half a million bucks.
I'm not sure that's really our charge. So all of this, with what's in the agreement, there are two things that are stipulated both in the permit and in the 1984 master plan that was approved by the county.
Okay.
Both of those mandate, don't say, hey, it's a great idea. They mandate that the club take that water. They are forced by the permit and they are forced by the
agreement.
The master plan to take the water. So
since they're forced to do it, can we charge them they're forced to do? Yeah,
the other part of that is when you look at the cost of disposing of recycled water versus the cost of manufacturing that water, understand first that we make that water whether that country club exists or not. We mm-hmm. have to get rid of that water, mm-hmm. whether the country club exists or not. And
we have no infrastructure to do that.
We don't have a vehicle other than the country club to do that.
And Van Vleck.
And Stan takes on demand from climate and rain and seasonality. Mm-hmm. He takes what he wants. Stan's running a whole business with that recycled water. That recycled water is not watering cows. He's got another agreement with the county to take mulch, you know, that is generated by all the stuff in your green cans, okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he's watering that with recycled water. So
it's going to a good use.
When you talked, I just learned shit all over the place. So what that kind of means here
you
is
peel off one thing of the onion and then
the other thing I would want to understand is, okay, if the club was not there, okay, the golf courses can either be fairways or cow pastures, but in any condition that I understand, there will always be, maybe not the whole amount, but there will always be recycled water that will be delivered to that property.
Well, that's the only vehicle that we have to deliver recycled water anywhere.
To dispose of it, the CSD would have to take possession of and maintain the controllers, the pipes, the sprinklers, the sprinkler head maintenance, all of the things that we do. We're not just going to create a flood over there and dump a recycled water in one place.
No.
We're going to do exactly what they do, whether it's a golf course or not. So what would that cost us if they weren't there? And is it in our best interest to make sure, no matter what, that they're there or not? Okay, now, that leans towards a long-established agreement that has worked for all parties,
and what I'm really
trying to get to is I don't want a third grand jury report that says we're giving away free water, because that's BS. We're not. The other part of that is the synergy of this mutual benefit agreement. Okay, that was created by Dick Brandt and the pension trust fund in those days. Was centered around the fact that when I moved here, we all belonged to three entities. We belonged to the country club.
Yep.
Almost all of us, 98% of us. We belonged to RMA.
When you bought your house.
And there was nothing but RMA.
Yes.
And there was the CSD. So it was not a matter of whether you were going to pay for it. It was really just a matter of what bill it was going to show up on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Agreed.
So that changed with the demographic shift in the South, and that changed when 60% of the people and 70% of the people in the community no longer belonged to the country club. Okay. So now we had this conflict, and the conversation began about gift of public funds. Okay. Mm-hmm. So
all the way back then.
That's exactly right. But what I do want to consider, and I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer in any of this. I'm just trying to lay out the problem, is that at some point in time, one of two things is going to happen. That club is going to fold, or that club is going to be in the hands of a private for-profit entity, okay? So does our approach to that change,
because
okay, when we have an outside owner that owns the club that is now using that free water to embellish his profit margin?
Just for fun, isn't the club currently in the hands of a private for-profit owner?
It is.
I'm just a little confused.
It is, but it has still retained some of that historic connotation that this is a community problem.
The goodwill.
Yeah,
associated with it.
It is, you know, they tell us they love us. So, you know,
I get that feeling every day.
So, I think one of the things you would have to answer is, in the long term, no matter what happens to it, what do you want us to do? But the real issue, I think, still becomes if we had to dispose of this water in the same way that Elk Grove does, then it's going to cost a lot of money to us.
Right, because we would have to put in the infrastructure for everything. Even if we put some of it over here at the gardens, which is the only community that is equipped to take recycled water.
The only retort you have to that, okay, and it fits into this question, is that the indirect diversion of recycled water, which is now available to us with modifications to our existing wastewater treatment plant and to storage, okay, if we, for example, were to secure a permit for Lake Clementia for irrigation only,
okay,
and that permit allowed us to replenish what we use. We don't have that right now in Lake Clementia. We only have an annual right to replenish for seepage and evaporation. Mm-hmm. So if we get that, okay, and we were able to use that water, replenishable with river water, to water the golf course, and take that recycled water and store it. And then move it to Calero and Chesboro in months where storage is available, which is starting in like in July now. We're going to start going from 105% down. There's an opportunity there, but all of these pieces have to fit together. But conclusively, the statement that I want to make when we answer the grand jury, one way or the other, is either stop asking us because we're not going to do it, or, in that statement, we want to say why, and here's the reasons, and part of that is mixed up in what I just told you.
Can I just a couple of comments about that? The way that it was presented in the Sacramento Bee is like we're giving away water.
Mm-hmm. Right, gift of public funds all over town.
Right.
Yeah.
For 30 years.
40.
40.
Mm-hmm. I don't mean to correct you,
we're
sir.
We're 2 years away from that contract being up for consideration again. The contract actually says that both parties have to agree to go forward or to end it.
Correct.
Just because we don't want to do it anymore doesn't mean we can get out of that contract.
We can't, or they can't blow it up.
Mm-mm. Individually.
Just to understand it, the CIA ditch, for example, is totally different. The CIA ditch, one group can say,
adios.
Come on. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. but
this
not,
one,
not
this,
this
one is not written that way, and it was written mutually beneficial, and it was written as a perpetual agreement. Right. It was not supposed to end.
Right. Right. And the other part of some of this is that when they sat down and did this, there was no place for us to put this recycled water, and the country club needed to water their courses, and so it was a mutually agreed upon contract, and it wasn't bad, you know, because it was something that we actually had to do something with that recycled water. And the other part of this that people seem to keep forgetting is that there's only a few places, as you mentioned, Diane, where we can get recycled water to landscape.
Yeah.
And we have no, they call it purple pipe, we have no purple pipe in the north or the south. Besides, I think the retreats has some purple pipe. And across the street, the gardens and the commercial center.
Yeah, and it's not... The configuration of the system, while there's pipe in the ground, it's incomplete in that
it hasn't been.
Retreats is stubbed out. There's one, if you ride your bike past there, you see the one purple stub, that's what's there.
Right.
This over here is different. Mm-hmm. They have pipe in the ground, and they have meters.
Yeah.
So, but they don't, the use in those two facilities is negligible. The use in Kyle's will be negligible. There is no real opportunity without physically going into unit 1, 2, and 3 or something.
And replumbing and everything.
And, you know, doing millions of dollars worth of work. Plus you need tanks. You gotta have tanks. You
and can't, pumps and yeah.
So
we'd have to put in all new infrastructure to get that water anyway. That's why when Bob and John Sullivan came up here back in 2020, and they were starting the residences, the board voted that they wouldn't have recycled water go up there because it would have cost like $3 million to put in the pumps and the infrastructure necessary for recycled water that we supposedly didn't have to give them. Mm-hmm.
So the opportunity, you know, and this is when we get a director of operations and we have a clear vision on where this program is going to go, the considerations for the diversion of this water has to be part of that because it has an impact on all of this stuff that I just described.
One other thing.
On emergency sources supply, on everything else.
And one other thing about this is that, what was the one other thing? Sorry, I lost it. Maybe it'll come back to me. Okay. Oh, in a drought in particular, what are we doing? We're conserving water. So the water that's coming from our household use that gets recycled, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to shrink down. You know, it's not going to be better or bigger. And okay, so we've got houses in here that don't use, that they haven't planted grass and they don't plan on planting grass and they have very little use for potable water to take care of their landscaping, et cetera. That's great, but we just don't have any place to use it in collection, collaboration with our regular potable water.
Yes.
And there won't be enough of it to even talk about. That's what happens in a drought. Anyway, I think that's great. I don't, in terms of all of us understanding it, I'm not sure. I'm sure about one thing, and that is the Sacramento Bee didn't do us any favors. And
well, I think they did because of all the problems they listed. It's a problem, but they wanted to, you know, they want to sell newspapers. Sounds great.
Right.
And yeah,
and
maybe
a scandal.
Even if they were right, I mean, you know, we were busted up bad last time on our financial condition, which we have made monumental strides in.
Yes,
correcting.
We're almost there.
Okay, so
what do you want to But is there a message that we want to put out to the community? Do we want to make a statement about
No, I don't think so yet, but I'm what I want is for us to communicate kind of what I just said inside of the discussion. It may, if we have this discussion and we get, you know, I want to have a review of the 87 agreement.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I want an agenda item to do that, because what I'd like to do is to give it to Barkowitz and Shanahan.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. give it to Jennifer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
So in the July package?
So in July we're going to have a discussion item for the Country Club water. Okay.
Right.
Country Club recycled water.
Uh-huh.
And I guess the other thing...
And it's an action item, because I want board approval, if I need it, I don't even know, to give that agreement to Jennifer.
Oh, I was just going to send it over to her this afternoon, but I'm thinking that's not...
I would like legal weigh-in before we go any further
and talk about it with the board, because right now it's just our opinions, and we're none of us are lawyers.
Right, and we need to understand, you know, if there's something in there that says, doesn't matter what the agreement says, you have to charge them, well, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, so I'll send that over to Jennifer and ask for an analysis of that this afternoon.
Yeah, I'll call her too.
Okay. Okay.
I think one of the things that we can communicate is that this process with the grand jury is ongoing, and we have 90 days to respond.
Yes.
And so, no, we are not going to go through all of this at one board meeting. It's actually up to the board president, if I'm not mistaken.
I have to sign it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but staff, it seems to me that staff prepared that along with a lot of help from Andrew Ramos.
Andrew wrote it. I mean, yeah, for the most part. The board may have communicated the detail, but Andrew crafted the mm-hmm. document. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
We'll make some comments at the meeting about that. But
in the meantime,
a brief discussion, we're not going forward.
I think that I should put on the website just something incredibly brief, and I'll let you look at it, John, that says, we've received a grand jury report. Please see attached. We're working on crafting
our
response.
Here's a link to it.
Mm-hmm. And we're crafting mm-hmm. the response. And then that's all, because that's all we have to say.
And we can sit here and talk about that, the contract with the country club for, you know, ad infinitum, but we are not at that point where we're going to...
We have 90 days. Yeah.
We're going to figure it out.
Plus, you know, maybe parts of their concern are addressed by the fact that maybe even in 86 days or 84 days, we have a general manager.
Oh, we will, I think we will.
Yeah.
So, and maybe we have both, you know. So, and maybe we have the two audits back that are due back to us from the...
Oh, we may well.
And
we may.
And we can provide a pretty rigorous status on the fourth audit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the fifth audit is...
Not due until the end of the year anyway.
Right.
So we're catching up rapidly. Yes.
Okay. Has everybody had a chance to say what needs to be said?
I feel satisfied.
Okay.
Director
and staff comments have been reviewed and talked about, and so we are on item number 8, which is adjournment.